Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Get more out of life. Come often and bring your family to our drive-in theater. There's plenty of time to treat yourself to something good to eat at our refreshment center.
If the windows get fogged, you'll have to take a breath down at the drive-in. Or the cat pressing white will scare you both to death down at the drive-in. A big buttered popcorn and an extra large Coke. A few chili dogs and man, I'm going broke down at the drive-in. Yeah, at the drive-in.
It's Day Player on 720 WGN, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. So once a vibrant part of American culture, drive-in movie theaters numbered nearly 5,000 across America during their peak in the mid-1900s. Today, less than 400 remain, including the Cascade Drive-In in West Chicago and the McHenry Outdoor, both of which I frequent throughout the summer. In a nation that loves cars and movies, why haven't they survived? It's a fascinating and fun documentary out there called Going Attractions, The Definitive Story of the American Drive-In, that examines the drive-in theater's role in American culture from its invention in 1933 through its peak in the late 1950s to its rapid decline in the 70s and 80s. Fueled by the recent resurgence of drive-ins, this nostalgic look at American culture, family, and entertainment tells a story of a changing nation and places the drive-in within the context of U.S. political, economic, and social changes. And joining us to talk about the classic theater venues of the drive-in is the producer, writer, and director of Going Attractions, and that is April Wright. Good evening to you, April.
Hi, how are you?
I am fabulous. I was at the Cascade Drive-In earlier this summer when I stumbled upon your documentary. Loved it, like loved it. What was behind your passion in making this film? I know you're from Chicago, so you must have frequented some of them here when you were growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. I live in Los Angeles now, and I grew up near Chicago, and I went to the Waukegan Drive-In, I went to the Grays Lake Outdoor, and I went to the Keno. And all of those are gone.
Yeah, the Keno just closed last couple of years, I think.
Yeah, it just got torn down recently. That was kind of a long fight on that one. But, it was a normal part of my childhood growing up. My mom always threw us in the back seat and took us to the drive-in. In high school, I went all the time. And I made a lot of friends go when I was in college, too. So it's just always, you know, if there was a choice to see a movie and you had a choice of going to the drive-in, that was always my preference.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I said this earlier in the summer that when Finding Dory came out, my 10-year-old daughter said, well, I think that's the movie we'll see at the drive-in in June.
So they
know that's kind of a marker because most kids don't know what that's all about. I don't think most parents or most adults have been to one in a long time. But I will tell you, when I go to the Cascade, if I don't get there at a certain time, that line's pretty long. And they pack it in. I mean, they're sold out every weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, all the drive-ins that are left, the majority of them are doing really well. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. And one is basically it's come full circle. When they were popular to begin with, they were family attractions, and drive-ins are big too. You know, you've got however many, places for cars, probably 300 on a small drive-in and over 1,000 on a large drive-in. And then you've got, you know, that times two and even more if you have kids. So you have to have movies like they're making nowadays, all these comic book movies, all the big animated movies, draw those huge crowds that, you know, love, you know, going to the drive-in.
Well, part of the experience, too, is once you get there is, you know, there's so many things, the concession stand and everything. But the kids before the movie, they're playing football in the parking lot with other kids. There's a little playground there that the kids are playing at. Some people are grilling out there. I mean, tailgating, whatever it might be. So it's pretty cool. I was looking at the history of the drive-in in general, and I know sometime around 1915, they had these air dome theaters for silent films, you know, where people would bring folding chairs. It's almost like what we do in Chicago now with these movies in the park, but that's kind of one of the first experiences of watching a movie outdoors.
Yeah, people talk about that predating the drive-in. That yeah, you could go, you could see an outdoor movie, silent movie. They did that in Europe a lot too, where there were outdoor auditoriums. There were also stories of during World War One and World War Two having the troops see movies in an outdoor experience. So there was always that element. But the thing with drive-ins really took off with the baby boom and the car culture and moving to the suburbs and all the things that happened after sure. World War II is what made it huge.
Well, that, and you define that in the movie. And I know that, you know, the first one in the history of this whole thing, the first official drive-in was the Camden that opened up in 1933. Richard Hollingshead was the guy that made that happen.
Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity for my film to meet his son, who actually remembered his dad doing that. And theirs didn't stay open that long. His dad was in auto care business, so it was just something that kind of went hand in hand. But, yeah, he's credited with it. And then soon after he started it, a bunch of them sprung up. There were about 100 before World War II. But it was really after the wars when they took off like crazy.
And this was vacant farmland, you know, and I love, you know, you talk about a lot of the venue names in this movie. You know, they all had those just great names, the Starlight, the Moonlight, the Skyview was probably most common, wasn't it?
I think it's the Starlight was the most common. And, yeah, the Skyview was also very common. Midway was a common name if they were between cities. But then most of them were just named either after the city or off of the road they were on. So you have, you know, like a Route 39 drive-in and those kinds of names. Yeah. So that people would know where to find them, basically.
But what you really do is you really establish how indicative these and important these drive-ins were during the time that cars were cool. And, you know, that was it was all tied into that experience because, first of all, cars were heck of a lot bigger back then. So you could bring a lot of people and be very comfortable watching a movie, you know, even comparatively to today.
Yeah. And you had the, not the bucket seats, but the, what were those called?
The front seats, all the way across.
The bench
seats. Yeah. The bench seats.
Yeah.
You had
bench seats. So it was easier to fit more people and just, you know, sit across it. Yeah. It was a little more comfortable. And today, if you go to drive-ins, a lot of people don't sit in the car. They bring lawn right. chairs or seats, and they sit outside, which is one of the changes that happens today. But that's because you don't have to have that speaker in your window anymore. It plays over the radio, so you can sit outside, and you can hear it inside the whole venue.
I'm a drive-in geek. I have to have the speaker in the car. It's very important. Yeah. It is. It's very
well,
important.
Well, a lot of them still have them and yeah. maintain them.
They do, and they sound fantastic. They really do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Well, I'll tell you what, we're talking to April Wright. Her documentary is Going Attractions, the definitive story of the American drive-in. If you have a drive-in memory you'd like to share or a drive-in you used to go to in Chicago or wherever you're from, give us a call or text 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and we'll be back after this on 720 WGN.
Yum, yum. It's time for a tasty and refreshing snack.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking about the history and future of the drive-in theater across America with filmmaker April Wright. April, you know, I've got a couple texts that came in already. 815 says, we love the Golden Age Cinema in McHenry. During the fall, they have classic movies every weekend like E.T. and Jaws. And you can see the shows for under $10. You can bring your own snacks as well. 815, love going to the McHenry drive-in with my first boyfriend. Always felt like an adventure. 847, I grew up in Loves Park, Illinois during the late 50s and 60s. We lived two blocks from the River Lane Outdoor Theater. We used to sit in our front yard and watch the cartoons from the theater. It's pretty cool. People got a lot of memories about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about it, you had drive-ins from 1933 and really up through the 80s. Pretty much anybody that grew up in the United States, it was just part of our common experience. Yeah. Everybody went to the drive-in. It didn't matter where you were from or what, you know, race or whatever you were, you know, economic status. Everybody went to the drive-in. And I think it's a little sad that we have so few left, and now you run into people that are just, you know, that will tell me, oh, I've never been to a drive-in, and that's just so sad to me.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. You know, we used to go to the, in fact, someone just texted 708, worked at the Harlem Irving Outdoor Theater in 66 and 67 when in high school. That's from Pat. I used to go to that one, I believe, when I was a kid, and then we went to the Twin on Milwaukee Avenue, and I remember doing that and bringing rafts from our cottage up in Wisconsin to put in the back of the Grand Torino station wagon and lay down and watch the movies from the back seat. But then I also remember going there in high school before they closed, and I think we saw Breakfast Club and then some throwback B horror movie. I think it was called Horror Express. I was trying to look it up. Yeah, it's a horrible movie. But
drive-ins went through a phase where a lot of the movies were not the best movies, but it didn't matter. It was still fun to go to the drive-in, but that was one of the key outlets for those types of films before cable, before VHS and all that. You would see those kinds of movies at the drive-in and have a great time.
Area code 920, within the last couple of years, went to the Highway 18 Theater in Jefferson, Wisconsin. Retro Fun 618, still go to the Skyview in Bellevue, opened in 1949. Great show,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah, these are all good ones. I've been to all these.
Yeah, yeah. Great show, Dave. Them. That's from Carol. 847, went to the drive-in, twin drive-in next to the Pelwaukee Airport. 773, went to the Cicero drive-in on Cicero and 31st, called the Bel Air, for many summers in the late 1960s and 70s.
And I can add one on Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Near Tui.
Oh,
called
okay.
the Sunset Drive-In.
Sunset.
And it's a big shopping center now. And it was there, opened in 55, and closed either late 70s, early 80s, before it was all torn down.
I know, it's sad to see that. And it's sad to see the ones that are still sitting there but not operating. That's the one that bothers me the most when we're on the road.
Yeah.
217,
well,
Harvest Moon.
I cover a lot of that in the film. I cover a lot of that in the film.
You do.
It's just, yeah, you know, I try to set it, you know, it's not just about the drive-ins themselves. It's all cultural. It's all about culture and economics and technology and all these things that play into it. And it is a little sad in the United States that we have this disposable culture and that we are so economically driven sometimes that we'd rather, you know, put a Walmart where a drive-in used to be. And that's like our idea of progress.
Yeah.
And now I think a lot of people are starting to realize maybe that's not the best way to go. So I think we've got a lot of renewed interest in things like this. But for a while, those kinds of things were happening.
217 Harvest Moon in Gibson City, still open and still awesome. 708 Aurora had one. It was the Highlight 30. Thanks for the memories, Dave. Kelly, you're welcome, Kelly. 317, four screens at the Tibbs Drive-In in Indianapolis. 630, had one in Grays Lake growing up, closed not long ago. Yeah. You know, and sound was a major part of this, and you break down so much of this in this film. And again, it's called Going Attractions, folks. And I'm telling you, you will really enjoy this. This is such a throwback and such a really, you put it together so well. And so nicely, just in the interviews that you had and really the photos and the videos and so forth. Sound is a major part of that movie-going experience. And I know it took, from the first drive-in, like almost 15 years to actually perfect how they actually were going to project sound into the car.
Yes. So the really early drive-ins just had one or two giant speakers up in front, either on the screen or somewhere under the, coming from the screen level, just blasting at everybody.
Yeah.
And then a few of them had this underground kind of sound system where they came up through portals. I didn't cover that specifically in the movie because it was just one or two drive-ins that tried that approach. And then RCA eventually did that in-car speaker that became the standard. And that's pretty much what stayed all the way up till the early 80s when it shifted to the AM radio and today FM radio.
I bought a set of drive-in speakers years ago that's in my theater, and there's an adapter on it so I could plug, it's not Bluetooth, but I can plug in my iPhone to it and play stuff through the speakers,
cool.
Which is pretty cool. But in 1948, there was the Browns drive-in and fly-in, which you could also, it was parked next to an airport. And that's why I always thought about the twin drive-in in by the Pelwaukee Airport, that why didn't they position the screen so you could fly your plane in and watch the movies. But that's pretty cool. And then
there were a handful of fly-in drive-ins around the country. There were actually three or four of them.
And there was also, you know, it gets very buggy. And I noticed that when these little pick, bug repellents, used to light it and stick it on your dashboard, didn't you?
Yeah, they still have them. A lot of drive-ins, you can buy them. I think the Cascade is sells
They do.
Them.
They do. Yeah, but I mean, you literally light it and stick it in your car, which is quite frightening. I have an original commercial. Let's play it.
Men, there's a drive-in movie full of juicy people. Wow! It's a trap! Help! It's Pick! We've had it, men.
A pleasant aroma for you, but not for mosquitoes. Pick is easy to use. Light it and forget it. Pick's aroma keeps mosquitoes, gnats, and sandflies away. Pick is the best protection for barbecues, fishing and camping trips, or just relaxing in the yard.
Or starting your car on fire. No, but it's interesting that they still sell those as well. You're absolutely right. All right, we're going to talk about concession stands and all kinds of fun stuff because there's so much of this experience that you would enjoy, too, if you haven't been to the drive-in in years. And we're talking to April Wright. Her documentary is Going Attractions, the definitive story of the American drive-in. And if you have a drive-in memory you'd like to share again, call or text us 312-981-7200. It is 3:32, and here are the top stories with Roger Badish.
The crowds are thinning out at the snack bar, folks, and there are still 3 minutes till showtime. You can easily make it for something that'll just hit the spot. How about it? Don't waste a second of refreshment time. You'll find such an appetizing assortment of refreshments at the snack bar, you won't be able to decide what to ask for first. All of your snack bar favorites are there, including fresh peanuts, hot popcorn, and candy of all kinds.
All right, it's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to April Wright. Her documentary is Going Attractions, the definitive story of the American drive-in. So you travel the country pretty much and in really search of all these fabulous drive-ins and the stories from the people that run them.
The film took me many years to make. I actually took multiple cross-country trips, going little town to little town. I ended up going to every single state except Alaska. And I've been to over 500 drive-in locations, so including open drive-ins, abandoned drive-ins, former sites of drive-ins. Yeah, I've been all over.
That's phenomenal. That's pretty cool. Well, you can tell by the documentary itself is just it was just so entertaining. I just really enjoyed it. The intermission time, folks. That's something that you know when we go to the Cascade or the McHenry, that you can still see in between. You can still see all these classic commercials, which is so cool that they play in the intermission time. And
most of those were made by a Chicago company. I don't know if you know that.
No.
The famous, the dancing hot dog and the countdown clock.
Yeah.
And let's all go to the lobby. And the Pick one that you just played, all those were made by a company called Filmac, which is Chicago-based.
Very cool.
And they still are making them today.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
And they also sell the retro ones, too. It's like the third or fourth generation in the family now. But, yeah, they're still doing it.
Here's a classic commercial that I found, a drive-in commercial for cigarettes. Let's take a listen.
Guess what? Guess what would taste good right now to everyone in the car?
Cigarettes? Here they are. The favorite of young and old alike.
We've got your favorite kind at the concession stand. Come on down and pick out the kinds you want to enjoy during the rest of the show.
Everybody in the car is going to love that, including the young ones, which I find fascinating.
Well,
that's what it was back then. I mean, could you imagine, rolling up the windows and watching the movie? It would be like a Cheech and Chong movie in that car, with all the smoke.
But that was part of the thing of the drive-ins, and still is today. I kind of say this in the film that they are a product and an expression of freedom, and that was part of the thing that you can go in your car and you can do whatever you want to, and you can smoke in your car and you can whatever. You have your own little space there, and that's part of what people enjoyed about it then and enjoy about it today.
708, I remember sneaking friends inside the trunk, of course. 847, late 60s, the Oasis in Des Plaines, which is now a motorhome park, if you remember that. I know you know which one that is. Yeah,
because the
sign is still there, which I absolutely love. And I only realized recently that was a drive-in. seriously. And then the Twin and 53 on Rand carried my this tradition with my kids into the 90s, bring them back. 847, I think it was called the 53 Drive-In in Addison. Many drive-ins back then in the early days were open year-round. And they would give you like a portable heater to plug into the stand where you would grab the audio out of, and you'd stick this portable heater in your car, right?
Yeah. The heaters are really common, and a lot of drive-ins still have them today. There are a lot in warm states that are open year-round. Like, I'm in California, they're open year-round. You know, sure. Texas, Florida, of course.
Sure.
Most of them are seasonal, but with all the good films coming out and the good crowds, a lot of drive-ins are stretching their season. So they're opening a little earlier, they're staying open a little later. Some are doing, like, you know, Halloween events and that kind of thing to extend the season. And some of them do still have those heaters that you can plug in and put in the car so you don't have to run the car engine.
Now, you interviewed so many people for this documentary, including Roger Corman. What did you learn from him?
Oh, Roger was the best.
Yeah.
I met him, I ran into him and told him I was making this movie, and he just said, oh, well, if you want to interview me, call my office, because he knew he was part of the story. So he was just really wonderful and gracious and an interesting guy and so key in film history, all the people that got their start with him. And I didn't realize until I started looking into the film how many people he had worked with and that their films were all drive-in films. Big directors like Jonathan Demme and Martin Scorsese and Ron Howard and all these people that made films with Roger Corman that were primarily played at drive-ins.
Yeah,
so
you know,
it's a cool part of film history.
They're almost kind of geared. Some of these producers made these films knowing that they would be in the drive-in. I mean, that was kind of a target.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're Jonathan Demme, you're making Caged Heat, which is some sort of, you know, woman prison movie in that time period.
Yeah.
That is the only place they would play.
Totally true. Yeah, totally true. You know, and now in the last few years, you know, I've talked about the story before, is that the studio stopped sending film to all theaters. So, you know, you had to go digital. And I know that kind of cut out a few more drive-ins that had to close because they couldn't afford it, because it was like $85,000 to $100,000 investment to go digital in these theaters because for so many years they were just on film. But, you know, thank goodness here in Chicago, the two, the McHenry and the Cascade, have done just that. Actually, the McHenry won a contest with Honda to get something. And they did that around the whole country, which I absolutely loved. I hope they do that with some other places as well. 815, Joliet had the Hilltop Drive-In, took my wife on her first date there in 87.
I think that is still there, but it's very run down.
Is it really? Okay, in Joliet.
Yep.
262, the Kino Drive-In, Sheridan, Kenosha, now closed, was a family favorite. Pumpkin Farms, Jay. I live in Muskegon. This is 231. We have a fourplex, four screens. They threaten every spring to close, but so far it hasn't happened. Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, some of these, if you don't keep them up, you know, you're at risk of closing. You got to kind of keep it up and keep that experience alive. But again, here in Chicago, we're very lucky. Now, you've got a new feature you're working at about the big screen movie palaces.
Yes. Similar to the drive-ins, this one's about the big single-screen indoor movie palaces. So the ones that people used to go to before the multiplex, a lot of them had balconies and that kind of thing, and similar story. There's a lot of them around Chicago that are left. Some of them are other youth venues now. They're not movie theaters anymore, but they started that way. And I wanted to know their story, too, because likewise, we've lost a lot of those theaters, and you know, I wanted to find out what happened to them and basically the origin. And it's been a really interesting story. What I didn't realize was many of them were built by the studios themselves back in the heyday of movies, and they were built in a really compressed time period. Almost all the big old theaters were built between 1915 and 1932. So I'm looking forward to finishing that film and getting that story out there, because it's also really fascinating and really tied to the motion picture business and the evolution of that in the early days.
I think about that. That's pretty brilliant for the studios to actually build their own theaters, you know, because it certainly would guarantee an audience building it in a neighborhood. And you're right. We have so many classic theaters here in Chicago. Like, you know, the Pickwick spent well over $1 million a few years ago remodeling, and it's just as fabulous as it always was. But then you've got, like, the Desplaines Theater that struggles a little bit. The Portage is really not... it needs some mm-hmm. some of these theaters need some serious love. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and they're very expensive to do those restorations. The ones that have been restored or been returned are great, and there's still several around the country that still need that kind of support. And there is one in Chicago called the Uptown.
Right.
That's one of the largest ever built. That's waiting for some help and some funding. So we'll see what happens with that one.
Well, the best way to support your drive-in folks is to go, and if you haven't gone in a while, take the kids, take the grandkids, just go on a date by yourself. But it is a fabulous experience. The digital quality of the screens are fabulous. The sound is great, and the concessions are fun. It's just such a retro experience, and it's so much fun. So I encourage you to go.
Yeah.
And I also encourage you to go to Amazon.com or to what's your website again, April?
Yeah, if you just go to my website, it's goingattractions.com. You can either buy the film direct, or it tells all the ways that you can get it, either digital, iTunes, Amazon. It's everywhere. You can buy a DVD or you can stream it.
Yeah, it's Going Attractions, the definitive story of the American drive-in. Again, available wherever DVDs are sold. A lot of fun. Thank you so much, April, for spending some time with us and bringing back some fond memories.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I'm glad you got so many great texts with people that remember their drive-in.
Well, next time you're in Chicago, we'll do this live in studio.
Sounds good, and I need to go out to the Cascade and the McHenry.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. April Wright, everybody. Thanks so much. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Musician Brian Adams is coming back to Chicago next month. We're going to talk to him next on 720 WGN.